Aye.
Oye. United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Coral W. Beach presiding. All of our business before this court draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. My name is Judge Peach. On my right is Judge Greenberg. On my left is Judge Allen. This morning we're here to for the oral argument in the case of James Golden, Jr. versus David J. Shulkin, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, docket number 16-1208. Will counsel for each party please note your appearances for the record?
Good morning, Your Honor. Keith Marin of Lieberman and Mark. With me at counsel table is Jeannie Mark.
Good morning, Your Honor. Sarah Pisina on behalf of the Secretary. With me is Selvia Cottle.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Does the appellant wish to reserve any time?
Yes, Your Honor. We'd like to reserve 6 minutes.
6 minutes for rebuttal? Okay, fine. Thank you. We're here today to discuss the issue, hear oral argument on the issue on how to deal with GAF scores in light of the changes in the DSM-5, which eliminated the GAF scale. You may begin when you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The issues before this Court are threefold. First, whether the Board provided an adequate statement of reasons or bases when it entirely neglected to address the DSM-5 conclusion that the Global Assessment of Functioning Scale lacks the clarity or reliability to remain a part of accepted medical practice. Moreover, before this Court is the question of whether the Board provided an adequate statement of reasons or bases when it misstated the law regarding the veteran's eligibility for an extra scheduler rating on a combined effects basis. Finally, the Secretary's recent amendment to 38 CFR 3.321B1 raises the question of whether the Department of Veterans Affairs has the express statutory authority to issue a regulation both retroactive and unfavorable to veterans. We urge this Court to find that the Board cannot produce an adequate statement of reasons or bases when it neglects relevant treatise evidence of record or misstates the law, and moreover, that Congress has not afforded the Department of Veterans Affairs the express statutory authority to issue retroactive unfavorable regulations.
Well, just on that point, Counsel, isn't that for the Federal Circuit to decide whether there's a violation of the Administrative Procedure Act? As opposed, or are you arguing that even if it had been correctly, this regulation you're referring to, adopted in accordance with the Administrative Procedure Act, as applied here, it's unlawful or arbitrary?
Correct, Your Honor. Regardless of the outcome of the pending appeal before the Federal Circuit, our position is that the amended 38 CFR 3.321B1 cannot be applied to Mr. Golden's case prior to January 8, 2018, because that would constitute an unauthorized and therefore impermissible retroactive effect.
Thank you.
Do you know if the parties who are challenged, I think it's DAV, who has filed the regulatory challenge in the Federal Circuit, do you know if they have moved for any interim relief in that case?
I do not believe they have, Your Honor.
But it doesn't matter, does it? To your argument, this regulation wasn't in effect at the appropriate times or time periods in this case, and accordingly should not apply here. Is that your argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
Just because I say it's your argument doesn't mean it is your argument.
Thank you.
Don't be afraid to disagree.
Thank you.
But I'm trying to help you here.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that. Okay. But that is, in fact, our position, that regardless of the result of the Federal Circuit, the separate issue of the Secretary's authority to issue, promulgate a retroactive regulation would preclude a retroactive effect here.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but if you could go back to this, Judge Peach indicated, and you've got it in your order of presentation, perhaps you could go back to that issue number one.
Of course. Thank you, Your Honor. With regard to the board's use of GAF scores in this case, the board decision on appeal indicated that GAF scores are without question an important component of evaluating a veteran's psychiatric disability, and thereafter held that the GAF scores of record did not support an increased evaluation. However, evidence before the board called profound question into the reliability and propriety of the GAF score. This evidence before the board was the DSM-5, which indicated that the GAF score scale is a questionable psychometric in routine practice and suffers from a lack of clarity, in particular insofar as it conflates the presence of symptoms with their severity. I would emphasize that point, Your Honors, insofar as this was this court's concern in Bankhead, wherein the board decision on appeal conflated the severity and presence of suicidal ideation. The board in this case not only neglected to address the DSM-5, this neglect was plainly prejudicial to the veteran. The board discussed the GAF scores of record at length, as mentioned, noting their importance, reciting the criteria for the GAF scale, and concluding that the GAF scores of record did not support entitlement to an increased rating.
Are you opposed to the number, the GAF score itself, the number, or to the symptoms that are indicative of that particular score?
Your Honor, we acknowledge the relevance of both the symptoms and the GAF score. Symptoms are plainly relevant to the assessment of the veteran's disability, as is the GAF score, insofar as GAF scores of record purport to assess the overall level of functioning. Our objection is to the reasoning the board applied in placing weight upon the GAF score.
Hold on a minute. Do you disagree with the proposition that once DSM-5 has been adopted by the Secretary as the method by which these matters should be analyzed, GAF, which is a function of DSM-4, is utterly irrelevant? Shouldn't have been considered at all.
We do. Respectfully, Your Honor, we do disagree. The reason for our disagreement turns on the distinction between relevance and the weight to be assigned to evidence of record. Relevance is a low standard. Does the evidence pertain to the matter at issue? In that regard, GAF scores are plainly relevant. They seek to assess the overall social and occupational limitations.
But if I can just jump in to follow up with Judge Greenberg on that point. But under DSM-4, this is the non-medical doctor talking here, mm-hmm. but the number, 50, mm-hmm. was merely a shorthand reference to describe inputs that got you to that number, right? The inputs being the symptomatology, right?
It represents the doctor's assessment, the combined impact of those symptoms.
Right, but my point being, the number 50 as a score, right, it exists only because there are inputs that lead a medical professional to say, because of these things going on in this person's life, I assign this number that's been set up on this random scale, the GAFS scale, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So if we now move, and this is Judge Greenberg's question, if we move to the DSM-5, which no longer uses that scale, mm-hmm. why would that number even be relevant? The things that went into getting to that number, social isolation, hypervigilance, whatever they were, those will still be relevant, but why should the number that no longer has any diagnostic value under the DSM-5, why should that matter at all?
Because of, Your Honor, because of the DSM-5 basis for removing the GAF score from the current DSM, the difficulty, the flaw in the GAF score is essentially opacity. A number of factors go into it. They could be symptoms, they could be severity, they could be individual variations in a doctor's assessment of what should properly be considered in a GAF score. And the result is this number. The APA, in promulgating the DSM-5, concluded this is insufficiently reliable to remain as part of clinical practice. However, although this metric is flawed, and those flaws identified in the DSM-5 must certainly be weighed by the board, these scores still constitute a conclusion by a medical practitioner, a conclusion whose merits, moreover, may vary from case to case. For example, if we had an individual practitioner who recorded a variation in GAF scores over time, 50 on one occasion, 60 on another, although those GAF scores would not be readily translatable to the conclusions of another practitioner, that still conveys something about that practitioner's sense of whether there is an improvement or a decline in overall functioning. In other words, Your Honors, the fact that medical practice has advanced to the point that the GAF score is now disfavored does not mean that this obsolete medical practice conveys no information about, or can convey no information about, a veteran's disability. That is why it remains, in our view, relevant, but the board must weigh that evidence against the problems associated with the GAF score.
And how would it do that? I mean, that it's a two-part question. One, how would it do that? Because it sounds awful lot to me like that's a medical judgment and not a legal judgment. But number two, why would we create a rule that is as complex as this when we can just adopt a rule that says you don't use the GAF scores anymore because all they were is conclusions? Use the input, not the output. I mean, it just seems to me that's a much simpler rule than to have the board delve into this thing that has clearly even split the psychiatric community.
Your Honor, if I might address the second part first.
Absolutely.
Thank you. The reason that we urge this court to adopt a rule that GAF scores remain relevant is that in a pro-veteran system, the standard for relevance is appropriately low. By way of analogy, if the veteran had submitted lay statements, I think my condition has worsened, I think my condition has improved, there's little doubt that the board would be obligated to at least briefly discuss these lay statements, regardless of the medical qualifications of the veteran. With regard to GAF scores, the case for construing them as relevant is even stronger, insofar as some GAF scores may well be accompanied by narrative explanations. Some may be provided by one practitioner providing a variety of GAF scores over time. And there may be additional factors in individual cases that increase the relevance of, or potentially increase the propriety of weight to be placed upon those scores. With regard to the first part of your question, Judge Allen, how the board can assess GAF scores, given that they are now disfavored under the DSM-5, the board has a few options. One would be to look at the changes in GAF scores provided by an individual practitioner over time and say, while these may not have absolute meaning, this corresponds to a relative increase or decrease in severity. A further option would be for the board to look at the GAF scores in light of the additional notes and narrative provided by the veteran's medical practitioner. And a third option in some cases would be to obtain medical opinion with regard to these GAF scores. What do these GAF scores mean in this context, given the deficiencies in the GAF scale identified in the DSM-5? With regard to the extra scheduler rating, or I beg your pardon, Your Honors, with the other point I would emphasize with regard to the board's use of the GAF score in this case is that it was prejudicial to the veteran insofar as the board insofar as the board looks to the overall occupational and social functioning of the veteran. Although the analysis is symptomology-driven, it is not limited to symptomatology, as explained by Vasquez Claudio. For this reason, faced with a board decision that included extensive discussion of GAF scores and resting in part upon them, this court lacks the guidance sufficient insight into the board's reasoning to extract the GAF scores and conclude that but for the GAF scores, the board would have reached the same conclusion.
So I'm sort of struggling with the two sides of that argument. I would have thought your point coming out might have been you can't discuss the GAF scores, and because the board had some discussion of the GAF scores, we don't actually know if that had an impact on what the board did, and therefore the error can't be harmless, right? But that's not your argument. Your first argument is that the GAF scores are still relevant, which means the board has to discuss them. There's harmful error here because the board discussed them. Right? I'm not following your harmless error point flowing from your first part of the argument.
Forgive me, Your Honor.
No, it's probably me. So,
the harm, Your Honor, flows from the board's discussion of the GAF score, but failure to discuss the DSM-5 and the Secretary's own interim rule adopting the DSM-5. In which the Secretary not only acknowledged the DSM-5 repudiation of the GAF score, the Secretary's interim rulemaking went further and acknowledged that the GAF score is particularly unsuited to disorders such as PTSD. This is the harm in the board's analysis. Not that it discussed the GAF score, which we contend is relevant evidence that it must discuss, but that it did not discuss additional relevant evidence of record, particularly the DSM-5. That is the classic reasons or bases deficiency which the board produced in this case and which renders the board's overall conclusion suspect.
How do you see a discussion developing based on what you've just said, that they should have discussed DSM-5?
Your Honor, the board could have discussed an adequately reasoned board decision would, at a minimum, have had to review the DSM-5 repudiation of the GAF score and explain the weight that GAF scores of record nonetheless merited. This is what the board failed to do. The board decision did include a parenthetical mention that the DSM-5 no longer includes GAF scores. However, the bare recitation of a fact does not represent analysis or the assignment of weight. What the board did not do here was explain, yes, GAF scores are methodologically suspect, but either one possibility, in this case, therefore, we place little weight upon them, or the board could permissibly, in principle, have said, even in light of the DSM-5, we believe these GAF scores merit weight because X, Y, Z. What the board did, however, was the one thing that it cannot do, which was to remain entirely silent with regard to that analysis.
I thought your client was going to be better off under DSM-5 without any reference to this GAF analysis, apparently rejected by the psychiatric, I guess the word is community, in DSM-5. Why are you insisting that these GAF scores rejected by the doctors be continued by the board in its analysis? I think if that's your position, what do you want us to do? The board made a balancing test. If on the one hand, let me explain it this way. If you have a fundamental rejection of any analysis or any mention of GAF scores because the DSM-5 rejects them, and the DSM-5 is now the current standard against which these analyses should be measured, why are you, if you insist that they are still relevant, then what are we to do? We're not fact finders. Board made a balancing decision. I honestly had a different impression of what your position was before we got here, but if you insist that GAF scores still remain relevant and should have been discussed, then so be it. Am I accurately stating what your position is?
Your Honor, our position is that, yes, the GAF scores remain relevant and must be discussed. However, the board did not complete the balancing test that is necessary for an adequate statement of reasons and bases. The reason being that the board did not weigh the treatise evidence before it, the DSM-5, that suggested GAF scores of record may not merit the same degree of weight they otherwise would. In other words, Your Honor, the board did not weigh evidence before it that the medical consensus had shifted over time from
Where was it supposed to get this medical opinion from? Who presented it?
Did
your doctor, did the veterans doctor say that these are the GAF scores that favor my client and therefore you ought to consider them? Did the secretary's doctor say otherwise? Where's the board supposed to find this out? In a context, as you're arguing here, that GAF scores are still relevant, as opposed to DSM-5 says we find them invalid, we're rejecting them categorically.
Your Honor, that is precisely our point. The way that the board would have been aware that GAF scores of record might merit reduced weight is that the DSM-5 was before it, that the Secretary had adopted the DSM-5 and in doing so had explicitly noted that GAF scores of record are methodologically suspect. That is what should have placed the board on notice that in weighing GAF scores of record, it must weigh not only those scores themselves, but relevant treatise evidence, the DSM-5, that was before the board.
5 minutes. We'll give you 5 more minutes.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. Your
Honor. So why I'm struggling with what Judge Greenberg was just asking you about, right? So if the DSM-5 did what it did because the medical community determined that these scores were methodologically problematic, I don't know why the board would need to discuss that at all. I mean, it would be the same thing as saying, well, the Ouija board told me this, and the board has to explain why the Ouija board doesn't accurately depict this because it's methodologically flawed to decide whether somebody has PTSD. I don't understand if the secretary adopts a regulation saying we're going to use DSM-5, and DSM-5 drops GAF scores because they are methodologically suspect, why the board would have to say anything about it. And frankly, if the board used it as a decision, I would think that would be error.
Your Honor,
do you agree with that statement?
I do not. The reason that the... Your Honor, the reason that the board must discuss GAF scores is that these scores under the DSM-4, which is no longer current medical practice, these scores do, at least in principle under the DSM-4, bear some relation to those same factors under review by the board. I would also direct this court's attention to Wise, in which this court held that in a pro-veteran, veteran-friendly system, the standard by which the VA should assess scientific or medical evidence is not necessarily that it is universally accepted by the scientific community, but with regard to the favorable evidence, only whether it is as likely as not.
Well, but why? I mean, what principled distinction could we draw between good veteran GAF scores and bad veteran GAF scores, right? In other words, if we adopt your position, we tell the board it's got to consider these things, well, that would mean it's got to consider a GAF score that's very high.
Right? Yes. To be clear, Your Honor, I mentioned Wise with regard to relevance only to illustrate that the degree of scientific consensus around a bit of medical evidence doesn't necessarily direct the relevance of that evidence. If I might return to your example of a Ouija board, or perhaps a phrenologist exam, since this is mental health, the distinction I would draw here is that phrenology was never a good idea. There was never a scientific or medically sound basis for phrenology or a Ouija board. With regard to the GAF score, these scores summarize the medical conclusions of trained medical practitioners who, although their practices at the time of promulgating the GAF score were not the same as they are now, were still rooted in medical science.
I don't get it. There was a point in the DSM when homosexuality was a psychiatric condition, wasn't there?
Yes, Your Honor.
And in DSM-5, hoarding for the first time was recognized as a psychiatric condition. And there may be countless others. I don't know. The DSM-5 came out, what, 10 years after DSM-4? 20 years?
Closer to 20 years.
20 years, yeah. So my point is simply, what are we as a court to do with your argument? The DSM-5 rejects the GAF analysis. The DSM-5 has been adopted by the Secretary. So why is it that we shouldn't reject any reference to the methodology in DSM-4, which has been rejected by DSM-5, which has been adopted by the Secretary? You're putting us, you're asking us to second guess, it seems to me, the board on factual determinations.
You have 3 more minutes. I've added 3 minutes to you.
As opposed to, and by the way, just because I'm asking it, and just because I'm asking it in this manner, doesn't mean that you should deviate from your apparently firmly held position. But let me ask it this way. If the court were to reject the notion that any reference to DSM-4, its methodology or its content, with the existence of DSM-5, is error, prejudicial error, or you don't even have to establish prejudicial error because it makes a reference to DSM-5, an inadequate reference or an adequate reference, would you object to that decision by the court? It sounds like you've been doing that all morning. Or are you trying to say that a plain English or a medical narrative of the veteran's condition, which may have at one point carried with it a GAF score, is now what should be considered by the board as opposed to the score itself?
Your Honor, what we would, begging the court's pardon, what we would suggest, what we would advance, is that if this court were to conclude that GAF scores are simply irrelevant, we agree with the Secretary that, amongst other difficulties, this would confound the board's capacity, or at least limit its capacity, to assess the severity of veteran symptoms that had been recorded originally under the DSM-4. However, the standard we are asking this court to advance, with respect, is neither novel nor unworkable. We ask this court to hold that the board must assess GAF scores of record, but must as well assess treatise evidence to what the DSM-5 indicating that these scores are methodologically suspect. These rules are not in tension. They are consistent with this court's longstanding guidance that relevance is a low bar, and that all relevance must be weighed by VA. Your Honors, I see that my time has elapsed. May I?
Go ahead.
May I briefly conclude?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Your Honors, I would, in addition to the scheduler issue we've been discussing, we would urge this court to hold the board's reasons and bases for denying entitlement to an extra scheduler rating were inadequate, where it misstated the applicable law, wrongly stating that that combined effects evaluation was not before it. And we would urge this court to hold that absent express statutory authorization, which is contained nowhere in the pertinent statutes, the Department of Veterans Affairs cannot retroactively eliminate combined effects extra scheduler rating. I thank the court for its time and for the chance to speak here today.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Your Honors. The Secretary respectfully requests that this Court affirm the Board's December 30, 2015 decision because the Board provided an adequate statement of reasons or bases for denying an initial rating in excess of 70% for PTSD. Specifically, as it pertains to the arguments raised in this case, the Board's decision should be affirmed for two reasons. First, the Board did not err in referencing the Global Assessment of Functioning, GAF, scores in appellant's record. A plain, clear reading of the Board's decision reflects that it did not solely rely on such scores to deny a higher rating. Second, the Board did not err in declining to remand appellant's PTSD claim simply because it had remanded other service connection claims, because there has been no evidence demonstrated or raised of a relationship or any sort of combined effect. As an initial point, Your Honors, to emphasize again, as based on the parties' supplementals and as argued by my colleague today, the parties are in agreement that GAF scores are manifestly relevant to VA's evaluation of mental disorders and that the Board is not free to simply ignore them. And Your Honors, GAF scores are an indicator of functioning. And Your Honor, Judge Allen, to your prior statement, I think potentially you might have said it was a diagnosis, but it's just an indicator of functioning. It's not the diagnosis itself. And this
let me stop there. So what I was trying to get across is, sure, is that didn't answer the, you know, the you have this condition or you don't.
Right.
But it, as I understand GAF scores, they are simply an output that is based on input, right? So you have certain things and at certain levels of severity that the mental health professional could just state in a narrative way, but the hope with the GAF scores was we got lots of different professionals doing this. We can try to have a standardized, something like in law school, a 4.0 scale where we translate. Right. So the idea being that a 50 on a GAF score exists only because it's like a social construct created by the APA, right? I mean, isn't that the import of what the GAF score is meant to do? In other words, it didn't have any meaning standing alone. It was a summary of other things.
Correct, Your Honor. We agree. It's basically a piece of data summarizing the occupational and social functioning that the examiner at that time viewed in that veteran based upon the symptomatology. And that's precisely why our point is that there are no new standards that need to be set forth, because the law is already clear on this matter. GAF scores are not dispositive. The law has been very clear on that. It's just one factor that the Board looks at. It's just one piece of data. Rather, as Marahan, Vasquez, Claudio, Bankhead all make very clear, the focus here is on symptomatology and how that symptomatology affects the occupational and social functioning. And turning to the Board's decision here, that's exactly what they did. We would respectfully state that our colleague has slightly inaccurately represented how the Board's decision was actually promulgated here. What the Board did was first acknowledge that GAF scores are important, but then they correctly pointed out that GAF scores are not dispositive, that they're just one factor, and that the primary focus is on the symptoms. And as my counsel colleague noted, they did also parenthetically note that the DSM-5 eliminated GAF scores from future examinations. Then what the Board did was progress to an accurate assessment of appellant's symptoms. They looked at appellant's symptomatology. Then they looked at how his symptoms affected his occupational and social functioning. They then determined that his symptoms did not result in total occupational or social functioning, which is what's required for the higher 100% rating here. It is only then, after that entire analysis focused on symptomatology and occupational and social functioning, that they then turned to GAF scores to see if maybe the GAF scores could support a higher rating here. And then what they determined was actually that the GAF scores were consistent with appellant's symptomatology and the occupational and social functioning previously discussed.
What about the appellant's argument that the real fundamental problem, or a fundamental problem with what the board did here, assuming that it was required to discuss GAF scores as it did and as you both appear to agree, that the problem was that the board did not adequately consider the methodological problems that led the APA to move in from DSM-4, using it as a criterion, and now in DSM-5 not. What do you say about that?
Sure, Your Honor. I have a multi-point answer to that. First, a reference to the Federal Register publication itself. So there, even though VA recognized that the DSM-5 eliminated GAF scores from future examinations and made that effective August 4th, 2014, the Federal Register also makes clear that VA adjudicators are still to apply the rating criteria as it currently stands and to evaluate mental examinations the same way that they always have, that it really does not change the VA schedule for rating disabilities. And so our point is that VA has already accepted that GAF scores are eliminated in the DSM-5 for examinations after August 4th, 2014. There doesn't need to be any additional discussion here because, again, there's no reliance solely on GAF scores. And I believe the court is also having the same trouble here in identifying exactly how would there have been prejudicial error in simply failing to have the board weigh the DSM-5 somehow against the GAF scores when actually the board correctly focused on appellant symptomatology and determined that that did not, and the occupational and social functioning, determined that that did not give rise to a higher rating. So even if we were to just wholesale delete the two paragraphs that the board talked about GAF scores, it would not change the outcome of this case. And our position really isn't that the board would never have to talk about the DSM-5. We could potentially envision a scenario where, let's say that we have some examinations that have the GAF scale and some examinations that now use the DSM-5 that use the new scale of global measurement, which is the World Health Organization Disability Assessment Schedule. Potentially there, sure, the board might have to, if they're going to weigh those two types of measurements, they would have to potentially discuss the DSM-5 and why, in that case, they would maybe give more weight to the GAF scores. And even then, we would argue that that's potentially a medical judgment. So simply put here, the VA has adopted the DSM-5, but the law is clear, and the parties agree, that the board needs to consider relevant evidence. They did so here. They focused correctly on appellant symptomatology and his occupational and social functioning. GAF scores were not dispositive at all in this case.
But how are we supposed to know that? They didn't say that. The board didn't say, well, we've considered them, but we gave it very little weight, or we gave it a great deal of weight.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, they did say that in a sense. They said that GAF scores are not dispositive, that their primary focus was going to be on appellant symptomatology, and that's precisely what they did. Their analysis, as previously stated, focused primarily on appellant symptomatology and whether that symptomatology resulted in total occupational and social functioning, which they found it did not, and which we would also point out appellant has never challenged that specific finding. And it's only then that they look to see actually if the GAF scores could be favorable to appellant and determine that they were just consistent with appellant symptomatology. So we would point out that really here it's very clear based on a reading of the board's decision they did properly weigh the evidence, and the rule of prejudicial error should apply because, again, even if we just wholesale deleted the two paragraphs concerning GAF scores, the outcome would not change here.
What do you think we're being asked to do by the appellant? Why are we here?
Respectfully, Your Honor, it seems as though appellant wants the court to establish new standards as for weighing the evidence, but our point is that no new standards need to be established, that the law is very clear on this, that the board needs to consider relevant evidence, and that the board, per regulation 4.126, needs to consider all evidence of record that bears on occupational and social impairment, that the law is also clear that GAF scores are just one factor, that they're not dispositive, and that the law is also clear that the mental health evaluations need to be symptom-driven and looking at the total, the picture of occupational and social functioning. And that all of that is very clear, and that's exactly what the board did here. So there's no need, there are no new standards that need to be established, and we're uncertain what appellant would also be seeking here.
Well, isn't the appellant seeking, I mean, so the way you just describe it, I follow you exactly, you know, basically shorthanding my words, not yours, the world didn't change when we moved from DSM-4 to DSM-5. We consider GAF scores in exactly the same way as we did before. It's just not going to be a reason, for example, to find an exam inadequate because they didn't do it because DSM-5 says you don't have to. But I think, channeling the appellant here, what they'd say is, well, the world did change in a little bit that affects what the board must do. They agree that GAF scores are still relevant, but the additional factor, I think he might say, is the movement from 4 to 5 suggests a moving away in the medical community from the accuracy or utility of GAF scores, right, that there's a problem with them. Therefore, before DSM-5 existed, the board didn't have to delve into that. But now it does, because that piece of evidence, while still relevant, is somewhat suspect. So if that were the appellant's argument, how would you respond to that?
Well, our point is that it still doesn't change for adjudicators, right? They still look at the entirety of the evidence of record. And again, in this case, even though appellant keeps talking about using the DSM-5, we fail to see how that would be favorable to his case, how just simply acknowledging that the DSM-5 finds GAF scores to lack some conceptual clarity would impact this case at all. And our point is not that the board would never have to potentially look at the DSM-5. Our point is the law doesn't need to change, that the board is required to weigh potentially favorable evidence of record. And all of the examinations in this case predate even the promulgation of the DSM-5. So we don't have a case where we've got some examinations that use the DSM-4 and some examinations that use the DSM-5, and potentially when weighing them, we need to delve a little bit deeper. And our point is there's no new law that needs to be established to say that, because the board is already required to do that if they have to weigh the probative evidence of record. And as for the GAF scale itself, our point also is that it's, even though the DSM-5 certainly moved away from it, the GAF scale was the multi-axle form of evaluating mental evaluations that was in play for the mental health community for over 30 years. And it is, as we pointed out in some of our pleadings, the most widely used global assessment of mental health functioning. So certainly in examinations that used the DSM-4, that's just a point of data, again, that we consider. And the DSM-5 does represent the first time we've moved away, the mental health community has moved away from that. But they didn't, even though they called parts of the GAF scale into question, they didn't necessarily go so far as to say it's completely junk science, simply that there are better forms of assessment and measurement out there.
So position, if there is a difference between the two positions, the secretary is saying what is relevant evidence? Everybody agrees you have to consider the relevant evidence. The relevant evidence to the secretary may be focusing on the symptoms of things and the GAF scores, well, whatever, because we've got the new DSM-5. the appellant is saying, oh, no, in addition, I'm not sure, and I don't want to put words into the mouth of the counsel, but in addition to the symptomology, because the record reflects that there is a GAF score, you have to call attention to the GAF score, and then because DSM-5 says it's no good, you have to say why it's no good. Is that kind of what the difference might be about the raising of the score itself?
Potentially, Your Honor. We think the crux of the difference still is that we think that the law doesn't need to change, that the law as it stands right now is already very clear as to what the board needs to do in weighing the evidence, and that GAF scores are just one factor, that they're not dispositive. The way I view appellant's argument is that they would have the board in every case talk about the DSM-5, but our point is that the court has never required every time medicine evolves, which arguably is daily, for the board to then take the mantle of becoming a medical peer reviewer and talking about this. Our point is that the VA has adopted the DSM-5 and our examiners are complying with that, but that GAF scores are just an indicator of functioning in older reports that used the DSM-4 and that the board may reference them as potentially one piece of evidence.
Let me ask you this. Where is it? Is it in this M21 or somewhere else? Where does the secretary give direction to the board? This is a non-adversarial proceeding at that point, correct? Sure. And the member of the board who conducts the hearing is supposed to make themselves aware of the veteran's file, supposed to, in accordance with the statute, assist in perfecting the appeal, and ultimately give the reasons and bases required by statute to be in writing for the determination. So where is this analysis given to the raters or the examiners that you've just described?
Sure.
DSM-5 is a categorical statement on the one hand, and on the other, you're not permitted, and in fact, we encourage you to consider all of the GAF factors and other matters that were present in DSM-4, maybe 1, 2, 3, whatever it is, the 30 years. And by the way, what happened before was adopted 30 years ago. Sure. Is all of that still relevant? And my fundamental question is, how does the secretary impart that direction to his subordinates?
Yes, Your Honor, I would be happy to provide you with the citation. First, with the caveat, however, that of course the manual is not binding on the board. However, the manual provision is consistent with the law and with the guidance that the board gives to its judges. So the citation, Your Honor, is the M21-1, Part 3, Subpart 4, 4.big01K.
What does it say?
In that, it explicitly, there's no easy way to cite to the manual ever. So in it, it explicitly says that we recognize that the DSM-5 has eliminated GAF scores and that adjudicators cannot base disability evaluation solely or primarily on the GAF scores, that they must evaluate the score in light of all the evidence of record, including symptomatology and manifestations in examination reports.
So it would be error, in your view, for the board to not discuss a GAF score?
Well, our point is it puts the board in a bit of a catch-22, correct? Because the board is required to address all evidence that bears on occupational and social functioning. And GAF scores are just one factor. They're one indicator, potentially, of functioning. And so when doing a thorough mental health evaluation of the evidence and providing adequate reasons or bases, that is potentially a factor that the board may have to look at and address, particularly if it may potentially be favorable in indicating level of functioning at a certain period of time.
So and the reason I'm asking, assume that you had some people who were thinking at one point in time, it is an error for the board to mention GAF in a decision now. Let's just assume that somebody had that position, okay?
Okay.
Is the secretary's position universally opposite, meaning, no, not only is it error to mention them, it would actually be error not to mention them? The weight you'd give them would vary depending upon the constellation of facts, but it must be considered as part of the mix. And this isn't a trick question. I really want to get where the secretary is coming from this.
So as the law stands now and as the directions that we've given to our adjudicators, to the board, and again, which we believe comports with both our regulations and the law, it is a piece of evidence that the board would need to consider. And particularly, again, we would emphasize particularly where it's favorable, because it is just an indicator of functioning, and we have in the VA disability system this thing called stage ratings. So that's always a possibility, right, that that could be a piece of favorable evidence that indicates functioning, even though the DSM-5 has now eliminated it completely from consideration. So our point is simply that the board does not err automatically by looking at this piece of evidence, and particularly going back to the facts of this case, when it is not dispositive at all. They did not rely solely or primarily on it. They first looked at appellant's symptomatology and how that affected his occupational and social functioning and determined that that did not rise to the level of total to warrant a higher rating.
Well, let me ask you this. Is the DSM-5 explicitly mentioned in this M22 citation section that you just read to us?
Yes, Your Honor. If you would indulge me, I can pull it.
Well, no, I don't. I believe you. That's my question. It's referred to explicitly. What else is referred to explicitly in the universe of either treatises or documents that the raters are required to consider? I mean, apparently they're supposed to consider the GAF scores, even though they're rejected by the DSM-5. They're expected to consider the DSM-5. What else is in that universe?
So we certainly would point to the manual, which is consistent with the Federal Register publication, which did explicitly set out VA's broad policy on this matter, in that even though the DSM-5 eliminated the GAF scale for examiners, and certainly VA complies with that by adopting the DSM-5, that it does not change the rating criteria itself. It does not change the rating schedule or the way that adjudicators apply the rating schedule. And that's explicitly in this manual. It recognizes that the GAF score was part of the multi-axle analysis used in prior versions of the DSM, but that the DSM-5 no longer uses the GAF score. However, and I will read directly from it, in very consistently with exactly what's said in the Federal Register publication, the manual says the removal of the GAF score in DSM does not change the application of the rating schedule. It merely alters the format in which diagnostic information is presented. When assigning an evaluation based on psychological assessments made under prior versions of the DSM, first, do not base the disability evaluation solely or primarily on the GAF score, and second, evaluate the score in light of all the evidence in the case, including symptomatology and manifestations in examination reports to include DBQs and treatment records.
Thank you.
Your Honors, if I may quickly turn to the second argument in this case, if there are no further questions specifically on the GAF scale. So, appellant has, first as for the final rule publication, even if we assume, pertaining to extra scheduler, even if we assume that that doesn't apply in this case and that the retroactivity effect of that is currently being challenged at the Federal Circuit. So even if we assume, though, that that final rule doesn't apply here and that Johnson is still the scheme within which we look at this case, appellant still does not prevail for two reasons. First, Yancey makes very clear that Johnson does not change the law in that the theory of entitlement has to either be explicitly or reasonably raised by the record. Certainly here, we do not have anything explicitly raising it. An appellant also has not demonstrated that the record reasonably raises any evidence that suggests any sort of relationship, combined effect, and certainly no exceptional or unusual combined effect between his PTSD, his hearing loss, his heart, and his erectile dysfunction. And second, Your Honors, appellant's argument actually appears to be based on the inextricably intertwined line of cases, despite his citation to Johnson. And however, appellant's argument there is also a far too broad of an expansion of that area of law. Because in Harris, the reason that the court found that the mental health disability there was inextricably intertwined with the physical disabilities was because the evidence was replete with records that said the mental health disability was due to the physical disabilities. And again, in contrast here, not only do we not have an evidence replete with records suggesting any sort of relationship, there has actually been no suggestion at all, no pointing to any evidence that suggests there's any sort of relationship between appellant's PTSD, hearing loss, heart, and erectile dysfunction. Appellant's argument seems to be simply because there could always be something developed that makes it inextricably intertwined, but that's far too tenuous of a connection and far too broad of an expansion of the law.
Could I ask a question about the status, or not so much status, the basis of the Federal Circuit regulatory challenge here? Is it based on the retroactivity point? In other words, that the regulation, that's the violation of the APA, that the Secretary doesn't have the authority to make the regulation applicable to pending claims?
So, Your Honor, my understanding, I did just a very quick read of it, is that that's part of it, that they're challenging sort of the general authority to even promulgate that regulation, but they're also challenging the retroactivity of it.
Has it been argued in the Federal Circuit?
No, my understanding was that appeal was just filed. That challenge was just filed last week. So,
and just in case this were something that this court had to reach, what is the Secretary's position on sort of the line of questioning that Judge Greenberg had at the beginning with appellant's counsel about the ability of our court to consider the validity of the regulation? I mean, clearly a direct regulatory challenge under the APA has to go to the Federal Circuit. But what's the Secretary's position about in an as-applied situation about whether the regulation hypothetically would be invalid?
Well, our position is that specifically as to the regulation, I apologize, Your Honor, I don't know that I've thoroughly thought that through, but certainly we agree that a challenge directly to the regulation under APA is pending at the Federal Circuit. But our point is that even if we were to assume that regulation, that final rule doesn't apply at all, and even if this court were to just wholly look at this case under the lens of Johnson for the reasons we previously discussed, the board's decision should still be affirmed, that the outcome does not change here. And on that, I will make one final point, if I may, Your Honors. With respect, the point also as to appellant's prostatitis, duodenal ulcers, tinnitus, and kidney stones, because those disabilities are not in appellate status, as Yancey held, Johnson does not change the jurisdictional requirements that the board would not be required to look at the effect of PTSD on those other service-connected disabilities that are not in appellate status, and it does not err by not looking at that because it has no jurisdiction to do so.
And as I understand it, the remanded claims were all for conditions that were remanded to determine service connection. In other words, they weren't service connected at the time.
Correct, Your Honor. And the issue here is increased rating for PTSD, but not to suggest that that is necessarily dispositive on its own, but certainly we would rely on the fact that there is absolutely no evidence of any sort of relationship or any sort of combined effect such that development of those claims would have any impact on the increased rating for PTSD here. And if there are no further questions, Your Honors, the Secretary respectfully requests that this court affirm the board's decision. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Your Honors, the Secretary, counsel for the Secretary has emphasized that VA's adoption of the DSM-5 produced no changes to the rating schedule and introduced no new law. And we agree. The appellant does not seek a novel interpretation of the rating schedule, nor fundamentally new guidance from this court. Rather, appellant's position is that the facts before the board changed in the decision on appeal. And insofar as those facts, in particular relevant treatise evidence, changed, the board was obliged to address this relevant treatise evidence. Moreover, the Secretary posited that even if those portions of the board's decision that discussed the GAF score had been removed from the decision, the outcome would have been unchanged. This supposition warrants great skepticism from this court. First, on logical grounds, if the board wrote it, presumably the board considered it to have been important to the decision, to have been worth writing. Moreover, to insert this court into the position of the board as finder of fact and conclude that even without the GAF score as it issued, the same conclusion would have been reached, constitutes precisely the sort of post hoc conclusion that McWhorter precludes.
Doesn't the statutory requirement for this court to take due account of the rule of prejudicial error require us to do just that? I mean, we might disagree with the Secretary's position, but aren't we required to do that?
Your Honor, if this court agrees that the board's statement of reasons or bases was inadequate, if it concluded that the error were truly harmless, then yes, the court would have to take account of the rule of prejudicial error. However, in this case, insofar as the criteria for a psychiatric evaluation are so closely intertwined, the facts of this case are not amenable to a conclusion that no reasonable finder of fact could have concluded that an increased rating was warranted. Moreover, the Secretary's supposition that GAF scores were only discussed in a manner somehow independent of other criteria for entitlement to an increased rating doesn't appear to comport with the text of the board's decision. The board did indeed say the symptoms do not support an increased rating. The board then discussed the GAF scores of record and said these do not support entitlement to an increased rating. And finally, the board concluded the symptoms and evidence of record do not support entitlement to an increased rating. This, given the way that the board decision was written, is it possible that the board, begging the court's pardon, it is not possible to conclude what the board would or would not have done without its discussion of GAF scores. With regard to the extra scheduler rating, with regard to the retroactive effect of the amended 38 CFR 3.321B1, our understanding is that the challenge to that regulation does not specifically speak to retroactivity. That said, I We would respectfully suggest that if this court finds it helpful, supplemental briefing with regard to that retroactivity issue may be helpful in this court's evaluation of that issue.
Could I just ask you one, while your time is ticking down here, to respond specifically to the Secretary's point that this issue, Johnson, wasn't either expressly raised, I think you'd agree with that, and Secretary's point that there is nothing in the record that would have reasonably raised the issue, because if we were to conclude that, then the retroactivity point goes away. It doesn't matter.
Certainly, Your Honor. And I see my time is
another 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, begging your pardon, the difficulty in this case is that the board, when the board remanded the issues of entitlement to service connection for additional disabilities, including heart disease, and entitlement to TDIU, the board essentially conceded that the record before it was inadequate to reach a conclusion as to the veteran's degree of impaired employability.
Aren't you now, though, making the argument about the inextricably intertwined point?
Yes, Your Honor.
And I've got that.
Right.
What I'm focusing on is your argument under Johnson.
Right.
And the Secretary's position on that is, among other positions, there was nothing in the record to reasonably raise that.
To which we would, Your Honor, our position would be that if nothing else, the board decision raised it when it remanded the issues of TDIU and service connection for heart disease and hearing loss, and remanded the issue of TDIU precisely because that was intertwined with the question of service connection for the additional disabilities. In short, Your Honors, the board found that it could not accurately assess the combined effect of the veteran's disabilities upon employability. And in the context of entitlement to an increased mental disability rating, employability in itself represents a symptom, a step one Thune factor, as well as step two. Thank you, Your Honor. In other words, Your Honor, the fact that multiple disabilities were remanded by the board, and that the board found it could not assess employability until a determination was reached on these disabilities, this invoked the Johnson-Yancey analysis in this case. Your Honors, I would conclude by emphasizing that Mr. Golden seeks no new law in this case, but simply a reaffirmation of this court's longstanding rule that all evidence before the board must be assessed, weighed, and explanations given for the weight assigned. And moreover, the board must correctly state and apply the law with regard to the application of extra scheduler ratings. I see my time has expired. I thank the panel for its time.
Thank you very much. The case will be submitted for decision, and we'll come down and greet counsel.
All rise. Court is in recess.
Thank you.